hello, and welcome to the show. Like Tay said, it's Saturday. We're adapting to the sports world. We figured we'd come at you after the first round. Well, technically the second round, but in my mind, it's the first round.
Don't get the people confused.
The NCAA tournament. So this is Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And good morning if you're on the West Coast, 9 o'clock. I am Tay, Eric Taylor, hyped up. We're going to get into the brackets. We're going to talk about it. Obviously, we'll give you some live updates with VCU and Michigan tipping off in about 15 minutes. And, you know, you want to join us and talk about your brackets? We'll give you a little bit of NBA, some other stuff. Ray will break it down. 718-664-9098. You could also check us out at rayandtaytoday.com. You can email us. Email us your favorite upset. Did you like LaSalle? Did you like Harvard? Or did you like Florida Gulf Coast? At rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Tweet at us. Let us know on Twitter, man. We got a lot of, you know, fans, the Gator fans. Tweet at us, everybody. And that's at Ray and Tay Today on the Tweet Meister, right? And like us on Facebook. So, Ray, tell them how we rocking. I mean, it's about the brackets, but we got just a little bit of quick stuff. Let them know, man.
Yeah, so in the beginning of the show, we'll get to everything else in the world of sports.
And then if anything
at the
else
end
matters.
Of the show, right, at the end of the show, or about 15 minutes into the show, 20 minutes into the show, it's all about brackets. So you could call us Charlie Brackets, Johnny Hoops, whatever you want. That's us. We're bringing it to you. But no,
I got the new one. You know how ESPN's got bracketology, right? I got to tell you real quick. We got bracketism.
Bracketism. Okay. So we'll bring you bracketism on this Saturday. And to start off the show, we also have a few other things happening in the world of sports. It's not all about college basketball. So we've got some happenings in the NBA. We've got some NFL movement and free agency. And we've got some other, you know, general scanning the world of sports for what's happening. And then the rest of the show, like we said, March Madness. We'll review the first two rounds, technically, of NCAA Hoops, March Madness 2013, the game's on Thursday, the game's on Friday. We'll have one game in progress in about 15 minutes. It tips off Michigan VCU, and then we'll preview this next round, which will leave us with a Sweet 16 on Sunday night. So let's start us off with the NBA, Tay. What's going on in the NBA? Let's go through
that
real
quick. How about them Heat? Your boy LeBron James got busy last night, but more importantly, the team, man. They do it again, 25 in a row. I think, to me, we're at a place where I'd almost be surprised if they don't get up to the record or at least get up to the point where they have to play the Spurs at game 30. It's impressive, man. I mean, everybody does what they have to do. And I'm just, you know, you're just blown away by the team and the confidence. And they could be down, and it doesn't matter. They'll come back. You know, the crazy comeback they had the other night against Cleveland. And, you know, then they do it again last night. They were only down a little bit. And then, you know, they just came back and took it over against the Pistons. But this Heat team is so for real, right? I don't know what else to say.
More than anything, we talked about it last time, and Hank talked about it with us. But to me, it's the mental. It's the mental aspect of an 82-game season. Because physically, we know that they have three supremely gifted and talented players at the peak of their career. We have a Hall of Famer in Ray Allen at the end of his career. You have role players like Mario Chalmers and Haslam and so forth. So we know the physical talent is there, but the ability for them to self-motivate and the ability for them to find a way to win, even when they're down, even when they're on the road. And look, it's hard 82 games to play at the top of your game, especially when you're in the dog days of February and March and maybe even, you know, the beginning of April before the games that really matter, the playoff games. So I give them so much credit for the mental strength and the flexibility to, you know, be down and come back and to motivate and do a back-to-back, you know, in Cleveland and then in Philly and in Toronto, and these are teams that have nothing to play for. And even
and to
when
stay healthy, right? You get props for staying healthy. All these other teams are banged up. Well, the Heat guys, even when LeBron takes the fall in the Garden after the crazy, you know, alley-oop attempt from half court from Wade, they just keep bouncing back and they stay healthy. You got to get credit for that too, man.
Right.
You know, they just and how about the coach? We never talk about Spoelstra, but he really deserves some credit. They're saying, you know, him or Popovich or Rivers might be the next Olympic coach. But he's become one heck of a coach. He got ripped 2 years ago, but he's fallen into it. He's really got his, you know, his thumb on the button, so to speak. But he's really driving it nicely, man. The Heat are impressive.
Yeah, give Spo some credit. And you know, everybody said, oh, he's a young kid. He started out as a video guy. But his whole family has been around basketball, and he's under the tutelage of, you know, Pat Riley. So he, you know, Van Gundy too, Stan Van Gundy and Pat Riley. So he's basically been a basketball guy for his whole life. Now, speaking of coaches, we talked about this a little bit off air. What do you think about Greg Popovich? I mean, I think that this guy needs to start getting some serious credit as one of the best coaches in NBA history. Well, what's your feeling about Greg?
Yeah, you know, we did talk about it, and I think right now he might be the best, obviously, with him and Doc Rivers. But when you look at the championships and you just look at the consistency and, you know, the records, I definitely think he's obviously top 10, but he's fallen into some rare air. If he could ever wind up potentially winning this year, because I think this is their chance. They're not going to do it next year with Duncan just a year older. So if they could beat the Heat and win it this year, oh, man, Popovich is going to be in a place where, you know, he's going to be a top 5-6 all-time great. You know,
what's
now,
crazy
having
about
Duncan and Robinson along the way doesn't help, right? I mean, that's kind of nice. But I think he, you know, him and the organization, they found Ginobili. They found the Parker. Look at Thiago Splitter is playing great.
The thing with him is that he's been able to do in the pros what not many pro coaches have been able to do, which is to create a system. You know, that's a college thing. You know, that's Tom Izzo world, or that's Roy Williams or Dean Smith or Mike Krzyzewski world, where you know that that team, regardless of personnel, operates a certain way, and they play a certain way. That's easier to do in college when you recruit 18-year-olds and they're on scholarship and basically they haven't yet reached their peak as you know, professional, as grown men. But he's taking grown men and morphing them into the system with interchangeable parts. I mean, obviously the backbone of that whole franchise has been Tim Duncan since he came out of Wake Forest. But think about how many pieces he's put in and out. You know, Phil Jackson did that in Chicago and with the Lakers. But give Popovich a ton of credit. I mean, he loses Tony Parker, his best player, the engine. No big deal. You know, next man up. Let's go. We play the Spurs way. And the ability to do that in this day and age of free agency and in this day and age of players that, you know, need to be coddled and you need to treat them a certain way and you need to cater to the players. It's become more and more of a players' league. The ability
to
have
the players' coach. You know?
Yeah, and the ability to have sustained success doing it, you know, with discipline and doing it your way, hats off. I mean, this guy's unbelievable. And you say top 10. I mean, I think right now he's got 4 championships under his belt. I got to think we need to do this top 5 NBA coaches of all time, but this guy's got to be in the top 5 right now. I mean, consider his winning percentage, consider his years of success. And,
you got a lot of coaches. You got Daly, you got Red Auerbach, you got even, you know, Bill Russell, you got, Phil Jackson.
I can't say that any of them,
Pat Riley,
except for Phil and
Pat Riley.
Red Auerbach. I don't know. I think tactically, Pat Riley was a great motivator. Pat Riley got very talented egos to play with each other, but you think Popovich had talent? Pat Riley had talent. Pat Riley had more talent than anybody. Potentially, you know, more talent than even Phil Jackson. Pat Riley.
He got a lot out of that Nick team, though. You got to give him credit for that because
he
didn't have that much talent.
He got to the finals and he lost in '94.
Yeah.
But
I
don't know.
Give him credit. And he changed styles. He totally changed styles with that team. He wasn't a beat 'em up, slow it down guy.
True. But I tell you what, if honestly, truth be told, I'd take Greg Popovich over Pat Riley.
Ooh, playboy.
We might have
Well, how about this? How about taking career-high 16 assists from John Wizzy, John Wall from the Wizards, who has got to be the halfway point comeback player of the year with their victory out in L.A., 103-100. I don't know if you saw the end. Dwight Howard needs to be the quarterback of, like, any team right now, because that pass he threw to Kobe, so Kobe could get up the perfect three-point shot with just barely 2 seconds left. He was able to dribble and shoot it, and he missed, and the Lakers lost 103-100. But it's a shame, right, because the Jazz lose, and the Lakers have an opportunity to gain some ground and solidify the eighth spot. Houston, you know, keeps on winning, so they probably won't get the seventh. And then, you know, the Lakers find a way to lose at home and give the Wizards credit, because they are just one of those teams that are just, you know, they're playing a spoiler role, but they're doing it really well, you know, around the league.
I tweeted it out the other day that if you look at the definition of valuable, right, of course LeBron's going to win the MVP. And if it weren't LeBron, it would be, you know,
Chris Paul,
Tony Parker, or Kevin Durant, you know, that sort of thing. But if you look at this Washington Wizards team without John Wall, they were pathetic. And with John Wall, they're actually a pretty competitive team and can give people problems. So in terms of valuable to his team, John Wall is about as valuable as a player as there is in the league.
25 wins now. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, they were, you know, really a joke before, you know, before he came back from his injury. So if you're a Washington team, that backcourt of Wall and Beal looks pretty nice. If you can get them, you know, a free agent and maybe another draft pick in the front court, you're thinking, okay, hoops in D.C., it's not looking too bad.
Definitely not. And I think the Knicks had a big win last night, you know, holding on and taking care of Toronto. You know, right now the East is really looking interesting. I think the Knicks are, you know, they're in a place where they're probably going to wind up being the 3 seed, but they are, you know, a game back behind Indiana, and then
a game and a half ahead of Brooklyn.
So, you know, but it, you know, it's so funny. It's one of those things where I just think they'll be healthy enough. I like how on ESPN when they talk about the Heat streak, oh, in game 28 when the Knicks come into Miami, it's not that big of a deal. Well, the Knicks already beat them. Miami's 31-3. Them and the Nuggets at home. Their only 3 losses are Golden State, Chicago, and the Knicks down there at Miami. So the Knicks could end this streak as well. Let's not sleep on the Knicks, but they've got to get healthy. But Carmelo's back. What did he have last night, like 37? I mean, I tweeted it out. I mean, LaMelo, you know, Melo is back and played a great game. And we'll see for this home stretch if the Knicks can pull it back together. How about these Hawks, though, Ray? No, we never talk about them except for when we talked about our boy Jeremy Pargo, who signed with somebody else after he got cut. But the Atlanta Hawks are the 5 seed, ladies and gentlemen, and playing pretty good ball. You know, with
Chicago,
what,
right?
Yeah.
Who thought?
38-31.
Chicago looked like they were rolling and they were going to be a 3-4 seed potentially. Chicago's falling off a little bit, and the Hawks.
They lost the gas, right? They kind of thought Rose would come back beforehand, and I think he's disappointing them, honestly. They're probably exhausted.
Yeah, he's like, only God knows, and this, and I'm like, oh, God, really? Just, you know, I don't know. There should be, sometimes social media is great, media is great, but sometimes it just needs to be a moratorium on on speculation, but then we would have nothing to do. So, you know, you come back when you come back, you know what I mean? Give us 2 days notice and saying, I'm coming back on, you know, April 1st. That's a weird day to come back, right? April Fool's Day. But say I'm coming back, you know, March 30th, and that's it. And just a statement of fact. Or like Michael, when he came back, right, he sent an
I'm back
to the league office. I'm back. That's all I need to know. Just tell me 2 days before so I know
your boy came
watch
back
that game.
Tony Parker's back. The Spurs, 53-16. They've been able to hold that lead. They're 2.5 up. And I think what's interesting, last night the Spurs beat the Jazz, which kind of helped the Lakers even though they lost. So the Lakers are still a game at game and a half, up on Utah. So right now, 1-8, Lakers Spurs. Can you smell? Can you smell a little upset? Gasol's back. Everybody's coming back.
Anytime you have a team with, well, let's put Gasol aside, but certainly if you have Gasol as well, but if you have Kobe at the, you know, at the swing position, at the two guard, and then you have Dwight Howard, and you have Steve Nash, and then potentially Pau Gasol, that team could beat anybody in one game, and let alone, you know, a seven-game series. So, yes, the Spurs would much rather see Utah. So anybody would rather see Utah. Or even
a young Houston team. They would love to see that. Go ahead.
Anybody out there in that 6, 7, 8, 9 spot, except for the Lakers, San Antonio would rather see. What a way to waste the season if the Lakers would have beat them. I do think ultimately San Antonio probably would win in 6 or 7, but I think it would be a nightmare of a series for them. That's not an 8 seed that you want to see.
Yeah.
We're going to get into this in the tournament, but it's sort of like how Oregon was not really a 12 seed. And so, you know,
shout out
like
to George Reister and his Ducks, baby. Yeah, we'll talk
about
it.
Yeah, we're going to get into that.
So how about the Nuggets, right? We talk about the heat streak. The Nuggets are going for, 15 tonight?
15 in a row,
14? Yeah. Yeah, 48 and 22. They're now the third seed. The Clippers are the fourth. Clippers are 47 and 22. And, you know, another one of our guests from the Japan Times, Ed Ottavan, we were tweeting back and forth, and he sort of feels like, hey, you know, like you were saying, it's, you know, nice not to, you know, to have a team ball and to do it and win without Melo, and it was a good trade for them. And I'm saying, for me, I got to be honest, as a Knicks fan, I'd still rather have Melo. And you saw that last night, that dominance in the playoffs you needed. We'll see. And I said, don't pop your bottles yet, because even though Denver is showing well against the top teams in the West and at home, 31-3, and this streak, will they win a series in the playoffs? Not like Melo's done it yet with the Knicks, but let's see if Denver could do it too.
Right. The good thing for them is they are right now in the number three, you know, slot in the in the conference. They're 31-3 at home. So in a seven-game series, if it goes that far, to have four of them at home is nice. But even this, I'll give you a stat that I bet you didn't know. They are 31-11 in the conference. So against Western Conference teams, which is obviously the first three rounds of the playoffs, if you win progressive rounds, they only have 11 losses. So they have
and 3-1 against Oklahoma this year.
Right. They have the best record in the conference, better than San Antonio, better than Oklahoma City. Now, just barely. They each have 12 losses. But even the Clippers have 14 losses and Memphis 16 losses in the conference. So Denver's played well against that brutal Western Conference, and they're just pretty much unbeatable. They're like the Miami Heat, 31-3 at home. So I like.
But don't
that
you
team.
Think that's because they run so much, and that's what the West does? And the Nuggets now having Iguodala, they're sort of the most defensive. They've got the Lawson and Miller at the point guard. Their most defensive and versatile athletic team. When you got McGee and Fareed up front, you got athletic bigs, they can run you out the building in the playoffs. If they don't, you know, make the baskets and their defense doesn't lock it down, you're not going to be able to run as much in the playoffs where it slows down.
100%
do you
agree.
Think,
it slows
now,
down.
Right now, 3-6. Let me ask you this, 3-6, they could probably beat the Warriors, right?
Yeah, because the Warriors play their tempo, right? So the Warriors can't really punish them in a half-court situation. Their fear is they go up against a team like Memphis that really thrives in the half court and can execute in the half court. But it turns out that Golden State and the Clippers, for example, you know, while they're good teams, they're actually good matchups for Denver, because Denver, they can't punish and take advantage of Denver's weakness. The teams that can take advantage of Denver's weaknesses are the teams that, you know, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Memphis, even Houston, that can execute in the half court and can slow it down and can win an 85-80 game, right? And so Denver, the other problem, again, we come back to this, which is fewer possessions, which means every possession counts. So the teams that get hurt a lot are the teams that turn it over, and lose possessions. The teams that can't rebound, obviously, and can't steal an extra possession or two, or can't get the defensive rebounds and prevent the other team. And the third thing is, who is your offensive scorer when you need a basket? And this team's got an issue. Is it Lawson? Is it Gallinari? Is it Iguodala? Who is going to get you 2 points when the game is tied, or worse, when you're down? So it's 83-82, and there's 17 seconds on the clock, and you're running isolation. Who's getting you your bucket? Gallinari, he draws fouls. He's a great free throw shooter. He's got, you know, a triple threat. But I'm not sure that I want to put the game in Danilo Gallinari's hands.
Yeah, definitely not. But, you know, hey, we'll get into it. Let's do a quick NFL before we get to the brackets. Talking about putting something in someone's hands, they put some money, $5 million guaranteed, in Ed Reed's hands, and he's officially a Texan, three for 16, 3 years, $16 million, but $5 million guaranteed. And then Pollard leaves Baltimore and signs with the Titans for a one-year deal. So officially the Ravens are a mess, and nice move by the Texans, because that's what they need, him and Jonathan Joseph now. That secondary will be stronger. They have a veteran leadership, and then with J.J. Watt and Antonio Smith up front, the Texans look pretty good, Ray.
Looks like the Ravens are going after Doomerville, which is kind of funny. But, yeah, the Ravens are done. The Ravens are done for the next 2 years. They're not going to be competitive in terms of even making the playoffs. You know, we said, what's the over-under? Is it 7? Is it 8? But they're done. The Super Bowl year, they got their ring. Flacco got his money.
But that's okay, though, right? Because Flacco's there for a long time, and he's signed, so they can sort of kind of quickly rebuild in the NFL. We know this to be the fact.
Right. So, but the next two seasons aren't going to be good. And it's funny, because this is the debate that we always had, right? Would you rather be, and the two teams I used to use from the early 2000s are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who won a Super Bowl in 2002, or the Philadelphia Eagles, who went with Donovan McNabb 5 times to the NFC Championship and lost once they went and won, and then they lost in the Super Bowl. So would you want to remain perpetually competitive and fall short, or at least have your Super Bowl? So,
well, I'll tell you, we know an Eagles fan from our fantasy league, my boy Scott, Cowboy Killers, and he'd rather have a ring. Nobody wants to lose, sort of like the Milwaukee Bucks in the 80s, to constantly be good and keep losing and not ever break through. No, you want that ring. And so the Ravens, it's been a gap, right, from, you know, the first ring to now their second ring, but they've done it. And I think with having that quarterback in there, and then you just build around him and do the draft and a couple of free agency moves along the way, they are in a place where they could definitely, you know, come back in 3, 4, 5 years and go for another ring. So I think you want to win. You know, look at my Steelers. We won, you know, 2 out of the last 6 Super Bowls or 7 Super Bowls, and now we're sort of hitting that place where we got to rebuild. But because we draft so well, you know, we've got the next man up theory, even though we lost Harrison and some guys. But you know, that's what you got to do, and we'll see how the Ravens have drafted. Right, some of their guys are going to have a shot. You know.
Yeah, this is a league where your first, second, and third year players have to produce, especially when you're putting a lot of money into Flacco and Ray Rice, potentially if they bring in a Doomerville. So you've got 4 or 5 guys making serious money. Haloti Ngata's gonna, you know, get some big money. So they're gonna have to have a lot of production from these young players.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of these musical chairs, right? You got Hasselbeck going to the Colts, Fitzpatrick going to the Titans, which he could probably start over Locker. No offense to Locker, but I don't know. And then I find interesting our boy, Urlacher. He's out there. He's not re-signing with the Bears. Kind of a bitter breakup, but these things happen as players get older. Where do you see Urlacher going? Where would he be a good fit with maybe a year or two left under his belt?
See, that's a tough one, because he's the heart and soul of the team. The Bears, anyway, it was he and Briggs were kind of the linebacker crew, but he was really the face of the franchise. And I'm not sure that anybody's going to give him that face of the franchise type of tag, right?
Well, he's not that anymore. Everyone knows he's not that.
No, of course, but that's what he's been.
He's a two-down player now.
But that's the problem. It's hard at his linebacker position to be a two-down player, right? You can do that as a defensive end. You can do that as a nickel corner. You can do that other places on the field. But to take your linebacker, you know, to put money into a linebacker that you're going to only have for a down or two, that's tough. So, and I don't know if mentally he's in a place to say, I'm essentially a role player. Because in Chicago, he was still the beloved, you know, Brian Urlacher, even though his mobility wasn't what it was and he wasn't making the impact on the field. So some of it is Brian Urlacher coming to that understanding. Maybe he needs to go, you know, spend a week in Hawaii and just, you know, reflect on his new role and come back swinging and say, look, I still have football in me, right?
You want him to sit down on the chair and do some reflecting?
Meditate in Waikiki or something like that, wherever you need to go to get your batteries charged. You know what I mean?
Listen, what he needs is just someone to be
something.
Like, hurt his feelings and be like, sorry, player, we'll give you a one-year deal, $2 million guaranteed, and you're playing two downs. That's it. Be thankful. It's hard. You're right. I mean, it's hard, I think, for a lot of players to get to this place, but I think the reality is I think the writing's on the wall. I think what's going to be interesting to see if anybody finally steps up in the next couple of days as we, you know, are entering the second week of free agency to sign Abraham, O.C., or, you know, any of these.
Falcons.
Huh?
I said O.C.'s going to the Falcons. He's visiting the Falcons. So he might
I mean, these guys have been making these trips.
Abraham. Yeah.
But nobody's signing the big pass rushers. You got Abraham out there, O.C., and one more I keep forgetting. But, you know, Freeney. So nobody signed these guys. So that should be interesting. And, you know, we definitely keep an eye on that with the free agency and stuff like that. But you know what, Ray? Let's do it, man. Let's take a quick little Ray and Tay break, and let's give them the bracket. We'll be right back, Ray and Tay.
We're back, and we're about to talk college basketball. So for all
you
fans, quick update, Michigan is up 14-11, so it's the number four Michigan Wolverines versus number five VCU, 13-11.
So far.
Right, about 5 minutes into the game. So that's a tough match. That's a great matchup, and it's a 4-5, and it's unfortunate that one of those two teams isn't going to make the Sweet 16. But that's a sweet, sweet matchup. You would hope to see that already in the next round, but
right.
You know, enjoy it while it's,
well,
you know, while it's on TV.
Yeah, no. I think it's interesting. I got to say, we got our tournament challenge, and Ray and Tay, we were talking about consistency before. 25, and out of 8 million people on ESPN, there are zero perfect brackets. I think five people have got like 30 out of the 32. My 3-year-old son, who made his own picks, is tied for first in our league with my boy, Mr. Coffee, Lamont, with 25. 3 years old, almost four, May 25th, right? William Truth Taylor, 25, and he's got Louisville, you know, winning it all because he likes the Cardinals because his brother likes the Arizona Cardinals and they're red. So that, you know, that works, man, you know. But
whatever works,
it's just,
you know.
It, whatever works, but it's just so fascinating, right? When we talk about these upsets, or really, let's just say natural form, right? Because nowadays, what we consider upsets with such a balanced field, I don't even think we can call them upsets anymore, right? Only VCU is the only five seed to survive, and all the other five seeds went down to the 12 seeds. So let me ask you this real quick. I want to ask you, if we do just kind of go over them, what's your favorite? You've got Harvard, their first win ever. Florida Gulf Coast, only their, second year of the program and their first win ever. Ole Miss, LaSalle, who's won two games with the play-in. What's the most impressive? I mean, obviously we go to the two seed, right, 15, Florida Gulf Coast. But overall, what game or what upset kind of touched your heart the most?
So like you said, I mean, you just said it. There was 115, 114, 113, and 312s won. So that's pretty amazing. I think the 12s were I want to say to be expected, but those were legitimate teams, especially Oregon. Ole Miss went to the, you know, they both were in the finals of their league. Oregon won their league. You know, I really liked, I give you credit, you talked about LaSalle, even when they played their, they're not calling it the playing game, you know, their round one. To me, though, I really liked Florida Gulf Coast, because not because just because it was a 15-12. They had beaten Miami, so people who didn't know, you know, didn't do their homework. But
right,
what I liked about it is they were the better team for all 40 minutes, right? There's not one point in time where you said Georgetown is the better team this day. Now, if they played 10 times, I don't know that they'd win 10 times, but I give them credit because they imposed their will. Not only did they impose their will, but
their style,
you know, their style and their energy and the Big East, you know, the Big East bully in Georgetown. And did you see there were a couple times where, you know, their guys were standing above the Georgetown players, not in a, you know, it was always borderline.
Sherman, that kid, Sherwin Brown, yo.
Right.
Brown had
but
24,
not in a
and then the
way,
other.
But in a,
huh?
You know, we're here to stay. We're here to stay.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to push us around. So to me, that was the game that I thought, wow, not only did they win, they were the better team all game.
They had that
swagger. Deserved to win, and it was not a fluke.
Oh, you're right about that. And they were very athletic, running up and down the court. And I think when Georgetown and Anthony and Barkley were saying this on CBS, when Georgetown finally started to run, they played better. But you can't wait. You know, and maybe it's a knock on John Thompson III for his style of playing and his choice of system. But, you know, you can't go slow and give, you know, minimize the possessions and give a team like that that could be, you know, maybe a team you could potentially blow out, give them opportunities to keep it close. And they just, you know, they said, hey, we're here to ball. And they, you know, they took it over. I think what's so interesting to me is they probably had just as many athletes, if not more athletes, than Georgetown. And Otto Porter, 5 for 17, 13 points. And our boy Starks, you know, he was the only one that hit those two threes at the end, but he dropped, like, what, 24 and played well. But Georgetown, you know, Otto Porter disappeared. He was a no-show, and that's a shame.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because this is something where, you know, we talked about Duke, Florida, and Louisville playing a style that is very much, you know, it's like Russian roulette, right? You can blow somebody out with that up and down the court shooting threes, you know, that up-tempo, and when you're on top of your game, nobody can touch you. The other side of that is Georgetown, sometimes Michigan State, and
Marquette.
Wisconsin.
Marquette and Wisconsin.
A team that, you know, maybe Marquette sits somewhere in the middle, but a team like Wisconsin, who ended up losing to Ole Miss, the teams that play grinded out basketball, fewer possessions, what happens is when you play less talented teams, you typically want more possessions because you want your talent to outshine their talent. So
yeah.
When you play a defensive type of basketball and you have a low-scoring game, the other team is in it. You're not blowing anybody out. So you have to play pretty efficiently. You can't have an off day because that other team, it's their biggest, most important game, especially in the early rounds, right? So you see that Georgetown and Wisconsin, because of the fact that they really couldn't score, and it's funny because Georgetown in the last 5 or 6 minutes was hitting threes and they, you know, closed the gap.
Because they were running it. They were pushing it, exactly.
For a while, right, they played their classic game and they couldn't score. And unfortunately for them, the game just got away from them. And same thing with Wisconsin. Once Wisconsin gave up the lead and they started playing from behind, they were uncomfortable. They didn't have enough offensive firepower. They weren't built to come back from behind.
Jackson didn't play good. Brusewitz wasn't stepping up. How about, though, the new face of the tournament? It's all about new names and personalities. Marshall Henderson, who shot 1 for 11 in the first half, and then he was 1 for 13 before he got hot, dropped 19 points, has a lot of swagger, talks a lot of mess. I heard he might have been a little inappropriate after the game on Twitter last night. I didn't see the tweets, but Seth Davis, our buddy, who was talking about it on the True TV broadcast down there with our two favorite shooting guards. I had to tweet it at Seth about, yo, he's working with two of our favorite college shooting guards of all time, Rex Chapman, who we call Rex Blackman, and Steve Smith, Silky Smooth from Michigan State. But Marshall Henderson is the dude right now, and Ole Miss, they got some swagger. Remember, they won the SEC tournament, so they're pretty impressive.
His game, I mean, he doesn't have the athleticism, but his game is a little bit like Rex Chapman.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So let me ask you this, right?
Court.
Let's talk about these conferences. So right now, the Atlantic 10 is 6-0. The Big Ten, 6-1. The ACC, 3-1. The Big East, 3-5. And the Pac-12, 3-2. What out of those either surprises you or shocks you?
The A-10. I mean, the fact that these guys just went in there, Temple and LaSalle and Butler and VCU, and by the way, VCU is down 5 to Michigan, so they're in a battle right now. But
well, this is two athletic teams, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, again,
that havoc.
Just like Oregon is not a 12, Oregon's an 8 or a 9, Michigan's not a 4. Michigan's
no,
a number
like
2.
A 3. Two or three.
2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago they were a number 1. So to me, this is a tough draw for VCU to get in this round to get a number 14. That's really, to me, a top 8, top 10 team for
some. And Michigan's built to play this
team,
right? With all their guards and the guys that can handle it from Hardaway and Burke and Saskas. They've got you know, to handle VCU's havoc press. They're sort of the perfect team for, you know, to play a VCU 18-15. Nice little break
on
the commercial.
Disappointment. So my most impressive is the A-10. What about you? What are you thinking? Who's your disappointment? Who are you most impressed by?
Well, you know, I got to say, look, no one thought Georgetown would lose like that. You know, I thought Villanova would lose, but Marquette barely won. So the Big East is a little disappointing at 3-5. I mean, come on. You know, you're going to just kind of bow out like that. And obviously, you know, we all would agree with the Atlantic 10 is the most impressive. But I'm kind of glad, you know, ACC at 3-1. I think their three teams can make some noise. I think North Carolina. Now look, NC State, they got smacked up by Temple, but they were the type of team where either they were going to get smacked up or they could like go on a little run. And I just think Lorenzo Brown was the difference to really pushing that team to the next level. And Leslie fouls out, and, you know, the other guys, you know, had decent games. But Temple, your boy Wyatt, the leading scorer of the tournament, had dropped 31. You know, Temple was very impressive. So for me in the ACC, I think the Tar Heels might have a little something for Kansas. If Kansas doesn't wake up from that game, which they almost lost as the number one seed against Western Kentucky, who played pretty good.
The Hilltoppers.
You know, I think, yeah, man, remember them. I really think that the Tar Heels have got a legitimate shot come Sunday morning to smack up Kansas. So I'm impressed with the ACC. Duke didn't play great against Albany, but they did, you know, enough what they had to do. And then Miami looked great. A couple teams that really look great to me: Miami, Ohio State, and Florida. You know, they just kind of look like they're like, we're here, and we're going to be, you know, respected, you know, in terms of non-number one seeds.
Now, who do you think benefits most from some of these upsets, right? Because you figure Gonzaga got Wisconsin out of the way. Potentially that could benefit them.
Yeah, I just think Gonzaga's got to be careful.
Georgetown going down at the bottom of that bracket.
I think Florida.
Right?
Florida benefits the most.
Okay.
You know, but I think Gonzaga's got to be careful because I think Wichita State, I think they're for real. I think Gonzaga did not play well, and I can see Wichita State taking them out. I mean, look, everybody makes their brackets. We all make our picks, and you do your different leagues and sheets. But once it starts playing, you just start rooting for good games, and you actually – it's so funny, right? We don't even care about our brackets, even though, you know, sometimes you do leagues for money and some for prestige and fun. We got our Ray and Tay group. But, you know, the reality is, you know it and I know it. We were tweeting each other yesterday. We love upsets. You know, we're texting each other yesterday. We both want to see – I think – and that's everybody's nature, right? We want to see upsets. It's fun. It's exciting. So everybody was into it when Harvard won. You know, I think everybody's into it when they see a Florida Gulf Coast. So I think right now Wichita State, they might come swinging for a Gonzaga. But Florida benefits. Florida benefits, definitely. Let me ask you this. What do you think about Oregon's chances – to advance, or do they just get slowed down right by St. Louis, because St. Louis is tough.
I think Oregon can beat St. Louis, frankly. Look, I think St. Louis can win. It will win, but I think Oregon has a chance. I was a big fan of Oregon's. Look, they won the Pac-10 regular season. They won the Pac-10 tournament. They had
Pac-12. Give them their respect.
Pac-12. Sorry. My fault. Give Utah. Give the new additions their respect, right? Utah and Colorado. Give them their respect. Utah and Colorado make them 12 now, but they're always a Pac-10. They were the Pac-8 back in the day. Anyway, but we digress. Oregon won the league. So Oregon, again, is not a 12 seed. They're an 8-9 seed. So to me, Oregon can give St. Louis a run for the money. Like we said about the Denver Nuggets, right, they are a team that's got five guys that are their sort of go-to guys. They don't have a one. They're not, Doug McDermott, clearly a player of the year candidate on one team where he's the go-to guy. So that's good and bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that they're a fun team to watch. They're better than what they played in the last, two, 3 weeks of the season where they were, kind of not as consistent as you'd like to see. But I think they're decent. I think they're going to give St. Louis a run for the money. I think St. Louis is playing with, a Rick Majerus sort of still fresh in their mind, a chip on their shoulder. So I do think St. Louis will win, but I look for that to be a great game.
Hey, two things I got to tell you about. I definitely like that Minnesota team. They took care of UCLA. Shabazz, one assist, which kind of sums him up, and 20 points, but we turn out to find out that his point total matches his age. He's actually 20 years old.
Oh, Danny Almonte.
Yes, I don't know what's up with that. He kind of hit us up with the Dominican style. And shout out to Dominican for winning the World Baseball Classic. We already talked about that, but shout out to them. And then, what do you think, Florida Gulf Coast, San Diego State? That's gonna be fun.
I tell you what, Florida Gulf Coast has beaten Miami and Georgetown, two number two seeds. So they could take
anybody.
They could take San Diego State. So a lot of it comes down to mental. What I didn't love, and it's hard when you're an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid. But what I didn't love was the fact that they were celebrating as if they had won it all. And to me, it's
yeah,
okay
but
to
you
do,
can't
right?
Say
I can't
that
be mad at them. No, I can't be mad at them. But what I would say is I'm the coach. I'd say, look, we're in 3 2-game tournaments. So let's win this one. And let's try to win on Sunday, and then we could celebrate. Then we could cut down the net. Then we could be happy. Because then we have 4 days to then prepare for our next two-day tournament. So, again, it's mental. I think that they are going to feel like they won their game and they won their tournament. So I don't know if they're going to beat San Diego State. I'm rooting for them. I'd love to see a 15 get to the Sweet 16. That's great. That's never happened before. So I would love to see it. I just don't know it will happen. I think that they've expended a lot of energy and even celebrating last night probably. So I think they won their tournament game.
Well, now what do you think about Ole Miss? Can they, after beating Wisconsin, can they go on and advance too?
It's possible. But when your leading scorer is so erratic – anything can happen.
There's no fear,
though. The guy was 1 for 11, and then he was lights out. So is the lights out version going to come out, or is the 1 for 11 version going to come out? So I personally am betting against Ole Miss in the next round, but, hey, you never know. You never know, especially when you have guard play. What we've learned in this tournament historically is that, sure, Patrick Ewing won a title and, Bill Walton won a title and Akeem never won a title, but ultimately it comes down to guard play. If your guys that touch the ball every possession,
Mario Chalmers,
are hot, Mario Chalmers, our guy Kemba Walker carrying a team on his back, right? If guard play wins this tournament.
Ooh,
so if you can get
looking good
fantastic
now. 22-17. Real quick update.
Yeah,
8 minutes to go, 22-17 Michigan.
If you can get fantastic guard play, that'll be your ticket. So now when Ole Miss plays K-State, right,
is you know, who's going to be the best player on the court? Is it going to be Roddy Magruder? Is it going to be, you know, are the big men from K-State going to give Ole Miss some trouble? Is your boy going to go 1 for 11, or is he going to go 8 for 11 and score 25? So I like K-State in that game, but again, another interesting matchup. And you know what? It comes down to matchups. Sometimes we over harp on seeds, but at the end of the day, throw them out. It's matchups. Is this a good matchup for you or a bad matchup for you? That's what it comes down to. And by the way, the second game, you have less time to prepare. So then it really comes back to, are you naturally a good fit against this team? Because the first game you had 4 days to prepare for. The second game you have less than 48 hours to prepare for.
Well, how about McDermott? Can he, him and Creighton, who played a tough game against Cincinnati put up 20 more shots than them and still lost. So that's kind of fascinating stat right there. But I think Creighton is a little bit more than just McDermott. They had a nice balance, nice game.
Their big center.
I forgot the guard that can shoot.
Break?
The guard that shoots the threes is nasty. I think Duke is going to have the hands full. Ultimately, I think Duke will win, but I definitely think. And now Memphis. Is Memphis, after a close game, are they now going to sort of turn it around and wake up? You know, they get past St. Mary's. Do they have anything for Michigan State? Because Michigan State, I told you, if Nix is dropping 20-15, they're going to go to the Final Four. Michigan State looks great.
The one
you think
thing
Memphis
that Memphis
has a shot?
Has is athletes. Josh Pastor was able to recruit a bunch of thoroughbreds.
And he's got some guys.
Michigan State's a better team, and Michigan State, like you said, if Nix is playing and Payne as that stretch four, who, by the way, made himself a lot of money the last month and a half. He went from being, you know, a possible second rounder to probably a top 15, top 10 pick in the NBA draft. So, and then, of course, the backcourt with, you know, Harris and Appling. These guys really up and down have a more complete roster. So it's a matter of getting out and running, and Memphis needs to let their athleticism show. If they can, then they can give Michigan State a lot of trouble. I just think Michigan State's too tough. I just think that their roster is really top to bottom. They hurt you in so many ways, inside with Nix, you know, inside out with Payne, the guards, you know, the defense.
Harris,
they rebound, they're tough. And yeah, they're I like
they're
Michigan
special.
State.
They're definitely
And in fact,
special
we talked
team.
About who's benefited. You know, Michigan State, nobody's really talking about them as a Final Four team. But
they still got a tough road. You're going to have to eventually probably beat Memphis, Duke, and Louisville. That's not
Louisville,
easy.
Right. That's as tough a matchup as a three seed has, right? The Athletic Six, the, you know, number one, the team, the two that was a number one all year, and the overall number one are standing between you and the Final Four if everybody wins and plays to form. But you know what? Tom Izzo has done some crazier things before.
Well, listen, hey, you know, I always preach Izzo and Bo Ryan. Unfortunately, Bo Ryan's guys, Jimmy Jackson's son, did not have a good game. So Wisconsin's gone. But I think in terms of coaching, you got to like Izzo. Let's talk about Butler. We haven't spoken about them. You know, good win over Bucknell. I know my three-year-old son William picked them to go to Final Four. What are you thinking about Butler and their chances to win?
Well, Butler is interesting, right? They're a six seed, and at times they've played like a top three seed, and at times they've played like they don't even deserve to be in the top 25. Now, their matchup is against Marquette, who frankly is lucky to be in this tournament. That should have been Davidson. I picked him.
Yeah,
I'm bitter about that, but they outscored 14-5 at the end of the game. So to me,
close.
That's a pick 'em. That's a pick 'em. I think that
Marquette might write the ship.
They might write the ship. I think that Butler. You know, I personally think Butler's going to win the game. Actually, I think Marquette's lucky to be there. I don't know if Buzz Williams can turn them around, and they can get them. They can get them back on track. So I do think Butler is going to win that game, but I think that that team gets smashed by Miami. I think Miami takes care of Illinois, who looked pretty decent actually against Colorado, but I think Miami takes care of business, and Miami takes care of that winner pretty easily.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because Miami, man, right now that collision potentially of Miami-Indiana, you talk about a game that could have been a championship. That's going to be one heck of a matchup. You almost wish they seeded the brackets a little bit differently. You know, I would have kind of liked to have seen it where it was set up differently. Maybe Miami should have got that number one over Gonzaga, if you come to think about it. But it is what it is, and, you know, whatever. But I just think that Miami and Ohio State, when the more you watch them, the more you fall in love with their teams. This kid, Sam Thompson, we talk about Deshaun Thomas, but what about Sam Thompson for Ohio State and Kraft? They just got the, and he's from Chicago. He grew up a couple of blocks from the United Center. Ohio State just got ball players like just like out of nowhere. You're like, yo, Mata recruits, right? I'm like, goodness gracious, they're tough, man. And you know what?
But again, another team that's been inconsistent, right? They were in the top five, and then they were down in 15 to 20 range, and then they come back and win the Big Ten and the Big Ten tournament. So it's, you know, I have them going to the Final Four, right? So, but they're the same team that could lose along the way. I mean, that's my least confident pick. Only because, you know, they've been stretches where they couldn't score, and Deshaun Thomas was having to carry that team. And sometimes when he doesn't have an efficient game from the floor. But I do love, like you said, they're getting Thompson, they're getting some support in the front court. Aaron Kraft is a great college guard. I mean, what a great teammate to have. Defensive, you know, tough guy, an unbelievable on-the-ball defender. And he's the type of guy that when it's a close game, he'll get a steal, a charge, you know, he'll box out his man. He'll find a way to impact the game defensively. And, you know, like we said, guards win this game. But if you've got an Aaron Kraft on the ball defending your best player or your best guard,
he's so smart, you know, and savvy, man.
Yeah, I like that Ohio State team.
Hey, I got to ask you. Are you looking at this? First of all, VCU, it's 25. It's a track meet. It's 25-19. They're missing a lot of shots, but VCU went scoreless for 3.5 minutes. I mean, they just finally got a basket, but it was 20. They won 17 for a while. You know, it's fascinating. They don't shoot it so good, but I guess, you know, Michigan,
here it is.
Give them credit.
Put up a stat. They started
Michigan
7
plays great
for the
defense.
13, and then they're 1 for 11 on their last, you know, last 11 field goal attempts.
That's incredible.
Just missed another one. Wow.
But give Michigan credit, right? They play very good defense. I think their defense is underrated. The issue that I have with Michigan in terms of the difference of why I don't have them in any bracket winning at all is sort of inside scoring and rebounding. Otherwise, this Michigan team, you know what they need? They need to make a trade. You don't trade in college basketball, but they need a Knicks. If this Michigan team had a Knicks or a Brusewitz, that would be the difference, you know, to have somebody on the inside. That would be the difference to make them win a championship. They just don't have enough. Their inside guys are young and just not that experienced. Now, listen, we got to talk about Hollins and Rodney Williams in Minnesota. They smacked UCLA, won by 20, but can they keep it going? Obviously, you know, they go against Florida and a team that we both picked to go to the Final Four. But sometimes it's not about what we picked, right? It's like we said. It's not like you're rooting for the upset, but Minnesota is a solid team. Talent is not their issue.
No,
or
consistency.
Coaching.
Yeah, because they've got talent, and they've got athletes all up and down that roster. And, again, that's an 11 seed that you really don't want to see.
Oh,
I mean, first of all, they've got all those battle scars from the Big Ten,
yeah.
And they've got, you know, experience going into Bloomington and playing Indiana, and then going into, you know, Chrysler and playing Michigan and playing Ohio State and playing all these tough teams, Wisconsin, these tough teams, and all of them coming, obviously, to Minnesota to play them. So, I feel for Florida, man. This is you're thinking, all right, we're a 3 seed, right? We get an 11 seed. That's easy. That when Minnesota's your 11 seed, That's a pretty tough matchup. I think Florida's going to squeak it out just because they have a little more on the on the perimeter, and if their shooters, Rosario and Wilbekin and Kenny Boynton, can hit their shots, I think Young and Murphy can hold their own with Mbakwe and Hollins and these kids from Minnesota. But that's also a nice interesting matchup, right? Minnesota can get up and down, but they can also play half court. So Florida's going to want to speed up the tempo. They're going to want to turn them over. They're going to want to create an up and down. And let's see if Tubby can play the game at his tempo and match them athlete for athlete and keep the game, potentially in the 60s and 70s.
Definitely. So we got a couple minutes left. Just looking at the brackets, let's tell people, any upsets in the next round that we think could go down. Obviously, we're talking about the Saturday and Sunday games, round three. We, kind of already reviewed round two. If you're just tuning in, we've got 5 minutes left. So we both kind of like Florida. We both like Michigan State. Michigan VCU, we both sort of think Michigan will hold on. I'm going to go with the upset. I picked Kansas for most of my sheets, but I'm going to say that the Tar Heels shock Kansas. What do you think about that one?
I wish it were to happen. I love my Tar Heels.
Get on the train, baby.
I'm going with Kansas. I think they got a shock to their system. I think they bounce back. I think Bill Self will get them motivated. And I think the front court, where Withy actually is the key to this game. And if he can impose his will.
Seven blocks last night. 17,
right,
six rebounds, seven blocks.
Rebounds.
Yeah, he's tough.
Carolina doesn't have an answer for that.
All right, you got Indiana over Temple?
Yeah.
And then
Indiana,
California, Syracuse. We didn't talk about the Syracuse.
Well, that could be an upset.
Shout out to our boy Fish,
Syracuse.
What do you think? Syracuse, listen, Fish told me yesterday, I spoke to him, man. He shouted out the show and said we're doing a good job. But he said, yo, tell your boy Tal. He said, tell Ray, Syracuse is cutting down the nets.
Really? As inconsistent
yeah.
as that team are, you could argue they might lose to Cal. I don't think they will. I think they'll go to the Sweet 16.
I think Syracuse wins.
Yeah, I think
so. We got Syracuse now. Butler Marquette, you're going with Butler.
I'm taking Butler.
Just like William Truth Taylor, my 3-year-old picked. I'm gonna go with Marquette. I'm gonna go with Marquette. Illinois, can they do anything against Miami? Nah. I don't think so either. I don't think they can. And then we.
I got Oregon over St. Louis, though. That's my upset.
That's your upset. Okay, so what about Iowa State? Can they shock the world and beat Ohio State?
No.
They got a good team.
They do.
They got a good team.
I picked that game over Notre Dame, though. I said, look, if Cooley, if you're most.
Hey, no, I give you all. Listen, I give you all the credit. You told me straight up, you were like, Tay, Iowa State without question. And I didn't believe you. You were right, man.
And Harvard beat Arizona. That's another question. Can our boy Tommy Amaker and his Harvard
Crimson.
This is going to
be interesting. This is the game I want to see. Harvard, Arizona. I think Arizona wins. I'm out here in Arizona. I got to go with Arizona. But I like Harvard. I just think Arizona too much. LaSalle, Ole Miss. This is the one, right? The double-digit matchup, 13-12. I'm gonna ride LaSalle. I think Ole Miss will win. You want to hear something funny? William Truth picked this matchup. He has LaSalle against Ole Miss, and he picked Ole Miss.
That's beautiful.
How about the 3-year-old?
I love it.
So, yeah,
well,
Wichita
and
State.
Florida Gulf Coast. I guess that would be the other. Well, Creighton Duke, but I don't think either of us think that Creighton's going to win, so we got Duke in that game.
Wichita State,
we both
maybe.
Like Miami or Florida. So the other,
like
the only
St.
other
Louis.
Upset would be Minnesota, Florida. That would be an 11 over a 3. Although I'm taking Florida. I think you are too. Florida Gulf Coast against San Diego State. That's a 15 against a 7 on Sunday.
I'm gonna root for Florida Gulf Coast. I'll tell you that much. But I don't think they're gonna win it. But they got my heart. A good show.
Yeah, Ray and Tay, we brought you another great show. We're flexible like that on a Saturday.
Saturday.
So enjoy the rest of the weekend with all the sports, but specifically with March Madness. We're still working on an extra special guest for you for next week to talk some college hoops, to talk March
Real
Madness.
Real quick, wait, Michigan's up 32-19. They got this. first half, 2 minutes left. But, yeah, we're working on the guests, right? We'll see if Steph Davis can join us. He's busy, but we'll see. But next week, and we'll see you Monday.
Yeah, we're out. Thanks for spending your Saturday with us.
Ray and Tay today, talking sports with friends. Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's that boy, Crazy Kill. Right now.
Son, well, truth be told, I'm more like a younger brother. Cause I've been around since people thought Dana Dana Slick Rick were brothers. And my philosophy is to master ceremonies and attack all your phonies. And yes, I move the crowd. I got it made and I'm black and I'm